Hi, it's Mina Kimes, host of the ESPN Daily podcast. Wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN, as told by the top reporters and insiders on the planet. The breaking news of Sports Center with the deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode is one I thought you'd especially like. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Josh Allen kneels it down, and here we go. 3, 2, 1. Get ready, Buffalo. Merry Christmas. The Bills are going to the playoffs for the second time in 3 years. Amazing. What a game. What a game.
The Buffalo Bills are in the playoffs. Today, how the long-suffering team got so good so quickly, and why their success won't stop here. Then, just before the Patriots and Bengals played, the world saw the video the team shot of the Cincinnati sideline and heard them defending it. What did the tape really show? And was it worth it? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, December 16th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Indeed. Your namesake team is in the playoffs, the Bills.
I mean, I don't want to brag.
Bill Barnwell is a senior football writer at ESPN. He has consulted with NFL teams, but the Bills are not, in fact, named after him. So tonight, the Buffalo Bills beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 70-10, clinching a spot in the postseason. And Bill, what's amazing about this team, aside from being named after you, is that for most of the 2000s, they didn't even have a winning record. But now they have made the playoffs in 2 of the last 3 years during this rebuilding process. Where does this recent success begin in your mind?
I think the simplest place for it to start is just hiring Sean McDermott. I mean, this was a coach who really seems at odds with a lot of what NFL teams tend to do when they have head coaching opportunities pop up. I mean, Sean McDermott was 42. It wasn't like he was old, but let's face it, every coaching opportunity that's popped up over the last 3 years has basically been, let's try and get a offensive-minded coach or someone who is particularly close to Sean McVay. And Sean McDermott is a defensive-minded coach. The Panthers weren't even coming off of a good season. They were 6-10 and ranked 26th in points allowed the year before. So the Bills really took a shot on Sean McDermott. On top of that, the Bills gave McDermott some level of personnel control, which teams are really, really loath to do at first-year head coaches, but it worked. The Bills had an excellent free agent period in 2017, and they ran their draft totally differently that year. Their previous GM, Doug Whaley, had repeatedly traded up in years past for regrettable moves, Sammy Watkins being the most notable one. McDermott's first move was to trade down, and the first player he drafted was Tre'Davious White, who had a big game against the Steelers last night.
Rodgers fires, and that's going to be picked off! That's White again! White with his second interception is forced out of bounds at around the 20-yard line. So White had an early pick, got hurt, had to go into the medical tent, checked out his shoulder. Back he comes, huge interception.
Well, before McDermott joined the team in 2016, they had the 27th best defense in the NFL, according to Football Outsiders. After that, they started ticking up, and now, Bill, it's one of the best units in the league. How did this defense get so good so quickly?
I mean, just to keep it simple, they got rid of everybody, pretty much. I mean, the 53 players who were on their roster for the final game in 2016 before McDermott arrived, there's three guys left in Lorenzo Alexander, Jerry Hughes, and Shaq Lawson, all front seven pieces. I mean, everyone else, the 50 other players on this roster, are all elsewhere at this point. And the Bills have drafted well, but I think what makes this team so interesting is they really go out of their way to get veterans from other rosters and somehow seem to get more out of those players than their previous teams. In their first free agent period, it was Jordan Poye and Micah Hyde. A guy like Jordan Phillips, for example, comes to mind in recent years, where he was a second-round pick, washed out of Miami. The Bills brought him in. He has 9.5 sacks this season as a defensive tackle. That's really impressive. There's just a lot of players on this roster who, either were good somewhere and have become great in Buffalo, or who really weren't playing very well at all and are almost out of the league, who have become regulars on this really talented Bills defense.
So last year, the Bills rolled the dice on Josh Allen in the draft, trading up to take him 7th overall despite his lack of college production. And his rookie season was pretty underwhelming, Bill. 52.8% completion percentage, just 5.4 adjusted yards per attempt. It seemed to me that they approached this offseason with a really concerted strategy to build around him in free agency. How have those signings worked out for the team?
It's been really good. I mean, it's really the same philosophy we saw on the defensive side of the ball. The Bills have had 15 players line up on offense for at least 20% of the snaps. 12 of those guys are new to the roster. It's both running backs, all three of their tight ends, 5 of their 6 top offensive linemen. You know, in a league where so many times you hear that a team should sign a player, or they actually do sign a player because they know the system, quote unquote, the Bills sort of realized, hey, we have coaches who we pay to teach players the system. We should just go get those guys instead. And so many of those players are playing at a high level. And I think it's really been perfect for Josh Allen, who, even going back to Wyoming, he had to play hero ball. He had to sort of make big plays for his team to win. And we've seen a totally different quarterback this year. I wouldn't argue Allen is a finished product, but he's been a productive quarterback this year by using his legs to create opportunities. He's hitting a lot of intermediate passes when he didn't do that last year. And he's avoiding turnovers. I mean, after throwing 4 interceptions in that really frustrating loss to the Patriots in week 4, this offense turned the ball over 4 times in 9 games. That's incredible for an offense that really just turned the ball over at will last season. And they turned the ball over twice against the Steelers last night, but they still did enough on offense to pull out a victory.
The snap. Josh going to keep it himself. He will sail into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. Josh Allen from 1 yard out. And the Bills are on the scoreboard early in the second quarter.
Do you think there are any lessons that other teams can take from the Bills' rebuilding process?
Yeah, I do think so. And I'm going to make a comparison that I'm sure Bills fans are not really going to love, but there's a lot of Patriots in what the Bills have done in their philosophy. The Bills have been great at pro scouting, and they've really found a way to bring in those players, like I said, who were struggling elsewhere, who were just guys elsewhere, and turn them into much better contributors with Buffalo. They've done great work with undrafted free agency, have a couple starters in their secondary from there as well. They've built their scheme to really accommodate their players. And that's not just a Patriots thing, but also a Ravens thing, where we're seeing that with Lamar Jackson and all the great stuff they've done on offense. The Bills don't have a scheme that throws the ball up 15 times a game downfield just because Josh Allen has a strong arm. They create better throws for him that play to his arm strength as opposed to just trying to hit a big play because Josh Allen has that in his arsenal. I think in the big picture, there's just this idea that you shouldn't blindly follow what the NFL does with their trends.
So the Bills are in the playoffs, most likely as a wild card team. And Bill, while the defense is one of the best in the league, the offense has been up and down. They really didn't produce very much against Pittsburgh. Do you think that that's a formula that can work in January?
I do, Mina. I think they're a team nobody's going to want to play this postseason. It's very different from 2017, where I don't think it's unfair to say the Bills sort of made the playoffs by accident that year. I mean, they benched Tyrod Taylor for Nathan Peterman in midseason and kind of just ran a hot streak into the playoffs over the final month of the year. This team is way better on defense. They have more faith in Allen. And I think the playoffs actually line up pretty well for them as a 5 seed, which is most likely where they're going to fall. They're a terrible matchup for the Texans, who they really, really gave a tough game to in 2018, only for Nathan Peterman to throw 2 late interceptions to hand the Texans a victory. And then they gave Lamar Jackson fits when they played last Sunday. I don't think this is going to be the last time the Bills are going to be in the playoffs with this core. They're really well positioned to be the best team in the AFC East if the Patriots slip any further. And I don't think it's too far to say they might be the best team in the AFC East right now.
Coming up, we're going to talk about those Patriots and whether their videotaping scandal is much ado about nothing.
To me, going into a situation with a camera, knowing that they've had the history, like, what are you doing?
What Who's are at we fault? Doing?
So I think that, you know, somebody needs to the finger pointing starts. Somebody needs to come to the forefront, because I'm telling you, there is a black eye over the New England Patriots franchise.
Bill, just when you thought Spygate 2 had ended, like so many bad sequels, it is now dragging on a lot longer than it should.
This is the Sex and the City 2 of NFL scandals, I think, is probably the fairest comparison for me.
I actually paid money to see that in a movie theater, but that's neither here nor there. So last week, there were reports that the NFL was looking into a video that a Patriots staffer had taken of the Bengals sideline during a Browns game. The staffer was a videographer working on a Patriots docu-series called Do Your Job. This episode was about an advance scout. The team claimed it was just innocuous B-roll. Now we've got the video. Fox Sports' Jay Glazer released it on Sunday morning.
And this is a piece you're filming on your advance scout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I don't see the advance scout in this footage.
No, it's not. We were trying to get some field perspective. My bad.
That's not the field.
I don't believe that.
That's why you would think you could take that.
I didn't know. I didn't know. Sorry. But I can delete this right here for you.
Damage is done, my friend.
The Patriots later responded, Bill, and they said, the footage we saw was intended to simulate what a Patriots advance scout sees when he looks at the sideline. Bill, what did it look like to you?
Yeah, it seemed to be about 90 seconds of footage of someone filming the Bengals sideline from the press box. It's not clear whether the team is on offense or defense. There's not seemingly any sort of link to what's happening on the field. It really just seems to be footage of the Bengals sideline with somebody delightfully from central casting, from Taunton or Dedham or Saugus or somewhere in the vague Patriots metropolitan area of New England, taping the Bengals sideline with a very flimsy argument and pretense for doing so.
Yes, I feel like the captions were almost more damning than the video itself, because you've got a Bengals security guard saying, why do you think you can do that? And the videographer in the voice you described denying it. But let me ask you this, Bill. I mean, was there anything useful from a football perspective to be gleaned from what we saw?
Not really to my eyes. And I think what's instructive here is just how NFL plays are called in 2019, which is you're not filming the sideline hoping to capture hand signals that are representing play calls, because NFL play calls are made over the radio. So unless you have an audio link of what's happening between a coach and either the quarterback or typically the linebacker who has the green dot on their helmet, you're not going to know the play call from hand signals. I mean, teams do occasionally signal personnel groupings, for example, with hand motions in 2019, but you don't need to film that. You can just track that with a coach, and teams do typically have coaches who track that stuff without having to do anything illicit or anything illegal, and teams don't hide that.
Well, as you mentioned, this dynamic between coaches and players has changed a lot over the years. It was a different world when Spygate 1 happened, which is relevant to this scandal, because I don't think people would care about this scandal if not for the original Spygate.
Head coach of the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, said today he's focusing on this weekend's football game. Well, he may be, but the rest of the sports world is focusing on the news that his team illegally videotaped its opponent's signals. The NFL fined Belichick himself $500,000. His team, half that, and they'll forfeit some draft picks.
For people who have blissfully forgotten, quick recap. 12 years ago, the NFL disciplined the Patriots for taping the Jets defensive coach's signals during a game. It was later revealed that New England had also taped a few other teams. Bill, what were the differences between Spygate 1 and the current situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's very strange, because there's not a really good argument for why the Patriots would be taping the Cincinnati Bengals sideline. Obviously, the Bengals aren't very good. I don't need to sit here and tell you that. They're the prohibitive favorites to take Joe Burrow with the first overall pick in the 2020 draft. And when the first Spygate incident happened, the Patriots were filming a Jets team that had made it to the playoffs the previous year. So there was sort of a tangible benefit to the Patriots for doing it. And with the Bengals, that's not quite the case. And the argument I've seen, some ex-players say, for example, and seen certainly a lot of fans say, the idea that the Bengals had a new coach and the Patriots needed to get intel on this new coach, on Zach Taylor, which I don't really buy for several reasons. Number one, Zach Taylor is running a version of the Sean McVay offense, which is certainly not unfamiliar to the Patriots, given that they played against the Rams in the Super Bowl last year. You can get everything you need on the Zach Taylor offense from tape. You don't need to have a camera pointed at the sidelines for that. And then Spygate 1.0, I don't know if people remember, was about taping defensive signals. It was not about taping the offense. So the Bengals defensive coordinator is a gentleman by the name of Lou Anarumo, who was the interim coordinator for the Dolphins back in 2015. So the Patriots are familiar with him from that time in Miami. So I don't really see an obvious fit for the Patriots doing this with some tangible short-term goal in playing the Bengals. It just does not seem to add up.
So, Bill, if you actually wanted play calls, how would you have to go about getting that information if you were, you know, spying for an NFL team?
Good thing this doesn't sound like you are perhaps being a double agent for some NFL team. But if I were to come up with a way to get these play calls in 2019, the only way to do it is to tap into the radio line between the linebacker and the safety who has the green dot on their helmet and the coordinator or the play caller. Otherwise, every play caller has their play sheet over their lips as they are announcing the play calls because they don't want to have their lips read. So unless you are reading the lips of the laziest play caller in the NFL who isn't putting a play sheet over their mouth, or you've tapped into the radio line, there's no way for you to get the actual defensive play calls in 2019.
So given all of the context you've just provided, given that we're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals, given the lack of useful information to be gleaned from the video we saw, what do you make of all of this?
It seems like something is missing, right? I mean, we think of the Patriots as this smart organization full of geniuses who are so many steps ahead of the rest of the NFL. And in doing this, given that there's not the same sort of obvious benefit to be gleaned that there was 12 years ago, well, there must be some other secret, incredibly valuable piece of information that none of us can pick up on but the Patriots. But then at the same time, you have to believe that there was a member of the Patriots organization who maybe was not aware that 12 years ago, the Patriots were dock draft picks and fined heavily for this exact same thing, who decided they were going to ask for permission from the Browns to film in their press box, were going to show up in Boston Bruins gear, and were going to point a camera at the sidelines for 8 minutes. And when they were stopped in the press box for doing so, they were going to give the exact same excuse that the Patriots told their personnel to give more than a decade ago during the first Spygate case, that they were filming things for a quote-unquote team show. So I think that person is either the most blissfully uninformed, naive member of the smartest organization in the league, or there's some element of this that isn't yet public or that we don't yet understand.
All right. Well, so after all of this, Bill, the Patriots managed to win 38-17, or rather the Bengals lost 17-38, which our friend Roger Sherman points out is pulling a Fetty Wap. If you guys don't know that reference, you can go look it up. But in any case, Bill, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Patriots probably would have won this one without the tape that we just saw.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was a romp for the Patriots. It just wasn't the sort of game that we would have hoped for from Tom Brady if you're a Patriots fan, against the league's 30th ranked pass defense by DVOA, the Football Outsiders efficiency stat. And Tom Brady was 15 of 29 for just 128 yards in this game. So tape or no tape, I think the Patriots offense still has a lot to work on before we get to the postseason.
Well, we don't know what the NFL is going to do, but I imagine the release of this video puts more pressure on them to do something, right?
It has to. I mean, this is not a case where the NFL saw this and then a couple of days later said, oh, this is a non story, let's move on. It's now stretched on for more than a week. And so clearly something is going to happen, and the NFL thinks that something untoward happened here.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Mina.
Coming up, a Rob Gronkowski story you won't want to sleep on. Here's another story I want you to know. The NFL has been announcing the names of the 100 players on its all-time team. And one of the youngest players to make the list, and one of just five tight ends, was Patriots great Rob Gronkowski, Mr. Yo Soy Fiesta himself. Gronkowski, who stepped away from football after last season and decided not to come back this year, much to the disappointment of New England fans hoping he'd pull a Jay-Z in return for the playoffs, did not compile the sort of records you get from playing for years and years. But he was indisputably dominant at his position. In 2011, for example, he scored 17 touchdowns, the most any tight end has ever racked up in a single season. And anyone who's ever watched him play knows how he could take over games, especially in the playoffs. Now, it's common knowledge that Gronk was a bit of a mystery coming out of college, largely because of concerns over injuries. Before his junior year, he had back surgery, enabling the Patriots to grab him in the second round, a pick that will go down as one of the all-time steals in NFL history. But what we didn't know before now was that, for the Patriots, Gronk was an even bigger wild card than we thought. The NFL interviewed Bill Belichick when they announced his selection to the All 100 team, and Bill revealed, in his customarily matter-of-fact manner, that when the Patriots brought Gronk in for his pre-draft visit, they left him in a room, and when they returned, well, this happened.
Rob was kind of a shot in the dark. He came up on his pre-draft visit, had a bad visit. We put him in a room, came back. He was asleep on the floor. Didn't make a very good impression.
He was what? He was sleeping on the floor?
Yeah, well, you know, I brought him in. We just kind of, you know, we're getting ready to, you know, have a meeting with the coaches and go through, and then fell asleep on the floor.
If you did a double take there, you aren't alone. It sounds improbable, but somehow the all-world tight end fell asleep on the ground before his meeting with Bill Belichick. Now, we know how this ended. The Patriots weren't deterred by the tight end's lethargic ways, and instead of focusing on the fact that he passed out on the floor, they focused on his ceiling, and they were right. Which, frankly, should be an inspiration to anyone who has ever thought they've tanked a job interview. As ever, Rob Gronkowski defied convention and taught us something new. Sometimes, when you snooze, you don't lose. You might even win three rings. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.